A stewardess reports a sexual assault to a captain. He's been at sea for 20 years. He's never done a single hour of training on how to handle it. And under current international maritime law, he never has to, which means the people most likely to be in that room with her are the ones least prepared to handle it. This week, I'm back with Krista Flaherty, Senior Technical Advisor at the Nautical Institute and the Institute's lead delegate to the IMO. Krista attended the most recent Human Element Training and Watchkeeping Committee meeting, where a significant amendment to the SECW code, one that took nearly 3 years to get through, quietly revealed a problem nobody had planned for. New mandatory training in harassment prevention and sexual assault response has been inserted into the PSSR certificate. The issue? PSSR is a once-in-a-career qualification. Every seafarer who already holds one, including every captain, every chief officer, every head of department currently working in our industry, is entirely exempt. The training only applies to people entering the industry for the first time. Chris and I get into exactly what that means for superyacht crew right now. This is a conversation about regulation, yes. It's also a conversation about leadership and what it costs when we separate the two. Here's Chris. Welcome, Chris O'Flaherty from Nautical Institute. Great to have you back. I think the last time we connected was in July last year. And since then, I believe you've got some new exciting developments that we are going to dive into today. Thank you, Chris, for coming back to Yachting International Radio.
Corinne, it's delightful to be back. Thanks very much for having me on.
So a few weeks ago, you attended the IMO and you covered bullying, harassment and sexual assaults. Can you tell us about the outcomes and any new amendments, please?
Certainly. So what's been going on? The industry has seen the Maritime Safety Committee's amendments to the standards training for certification and watchkeeping, which came out as a big amendment in force in January, which took about 2.5-3 years to get through. And that was a change to a course known as PSSR, which is your personal social responsibilities course. And what happened was they've inserted into that course a new competence, which is all to do with sexual harassment prevention and response. And it went down really well. It took an awful lot of negotiations to get there. But two things have happened since then. The first one is that when that course was implemented in January, a number of port state controllers started going on board vessels saying, right, have you got proof that your sailors have done this new module? To which a lot of the masters were saying, well, no, because it turns out that PSSR is a once-in-a-lifetime certificate. And so that is the course you do at the very beginning of your seagoing career, and you do that course once. So it's not like your firefighting, which you've got to review every 5 years. Yeah. PSSR is a lifetime certificate. And that was raised at the IMO at the recent Human Element Training and Watchkeeping meeting. And a number of people's eyebrows were raised because when they passed that amendment to STCW, they genuinely inside themselves believed that this was one of those things, because we renew our STCW certificates every 5 years. Well, no, we don't review all of them. We renew some of them, not that one. And so, of course, what that means is that all new seafarers going to sea effectively for the first time will do that module. But if you've been at sea for any period whatsoever, you will never do it throughout your career. And, of course, the eyebrows were raised because, yes, of course, I'll be slightly careful what I say, but young sailors going to sea for the first time generally aren't the problem.
Yes.
The problem tends to be people with a slightly longer seagoing career.
Yes.
I think that's probably the most polite way of phrasing it. So anyway, we can talk about that in a bit more detail if you want to. The second thing that's happened, though, is, okay, there is progress because the review of the standards training certification of watchkeepers remains ongoing. This is a much, much broader review. And one of the key things that was discussed is the insertion of new competencies at the operational and the management levels, which is basically your junior officers and your senior officers in sexual harassment prevention and response. And so those were discussed at great length. And when that review finally reports in 2030, there will be new competences. Again, they will be once in a career competences, but what it does mean is that the people going up the career ladder will be caught and they will be trained.
How do you track that they have completed the relevant certifications, such as the body?
So in terms of PSSR, in terms of that basic thing which came out on the 1st of January, anyone that receives their PSSR certificates from the 1st of January 2026 onwards will have done that course. Yes. They cannot receive the certificate unless they have done that module. And where the new competences are going in terms of SDCW 2.1, SDCW 3.1, and that 2.1 is your deck officer's basic qualification, 3.1 is your engineering officer's basic qualification, the same with the more advanced qualifications. Again, anyone that receives that certificate after the new amendments come into force, which will probably be about 2031, they will have achieved that competence. Again, though, there's no backwards trailing. If you've already got your certificate, you don't have to go away and do that module to keep your certificate, because we don't. That's the STCW system. And this is the bit, I think, where a number of lessons have been learned for some people who thought the new change was going to mean everyone's captured within 5 years. Well, no, it doesn't. And it's understanding, in some cases, the real nuances of the way STCW works. And some of that, I think, was just lost by, or is lost into the enthusiasm of some of the delegations. Wow, we're going to get something through. Well, actually, you know, you've chosen a vehicle, which means you don't quite achieve everything. They have achieved a lot. Please don't take anything away from what's been achieved. Yes. It's huge to get this in there and to listen to the debates in both plenary session, which is the main call, and in the working group where the detail is done. It was fantastic because you've got people really taking this seriously.
Yes. Great, Chris. So if you're a master and you've been in the industry for, let's say, 20 years, and you want to get that training, what can you do and where do you potentially go?
So that's something, if you're already qualified, then what happens there is a lot of companies, and we're picking this up through the industry now, a lot of companies are offering the training. And when I say offering, I'm using that in its very broadest sense, where there's a degree of compulsory in it. So a lot of companies are realizing just how serious this matter is, and they are taking the principles out of both the change to, you know, the personal social responsibilities course, personal safety, social responsibilities, and also the new management level competencies. They are looking at what a good course looks like, and they are offering it to their own people. And in some cases, my understanding is with some, you know, some vessel owners, charterers, etc., they're insisting people do it. And this is, to be honest, it's no different from a shore. It's no different from a lot of office workplaces where, if you look at, in your case, Australian law, there's no legal requirements for people to necessarily be trained in this. However, good employers think this is a sensible thing to do. As you know, I used to serve with the Royal Navy, and this was one of those things you had to renew every 3 years. You should go and do a Monday top-up module, reminds you of the key principles, reminds you. I think the things to look out for: how to not be a passive bystander, how to be an active bystander, how to address it when it does occur. And good employers realise this is what good employers do. So a roundabout way of answering your question, if you're a master and you already want to get the training, a lot of companies are offering it already. In the super yacht world, where organisations tend to be that little bit smaller, again, a master can insist his officers and his seniors on board all do that training. And that is something a master can very easily say, an owner can say it to a master. And I think that's the cultural change we need to start influencing on this.
What's Flag State's involvement with this new, can I call it legislation?
So regulation. So it, because the SDC, where it, the training has been inserted into the SDCW code and convention. It's gone into the code. So you've got all the convention, which is the headline articles. That's the big international agreement. That's the bit which you would class as, it's effectively become part of treaty law. Below the SDCW convention, which is a very short, pithy, these are the big principles. You've then got the SDCW code, which is that delightful book, which we've all been through at various stages of our career. There's about 350 pages of all of the detail. And where this has been inserted is into the code. So it becomes regulation is the best way of phrasing it. And flag states will implement the regulations in the SDCW code. And that is where it emerged in time for the recent meeting of the Human Element Training and Watchkeeping Committee that some flag states have read it and said, oh, well, there's a new competence. Let's go on the board and make sure people have achieved it.
Yeah.
But it led to a number of countries, and in the UK, the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency pushed out a notice just reminding everybody that PSSR is a once-in-a-career certificate. And so Port State Control cannot come on board and demand to see that you've done individual modules of a once-in-a-lifetime certificate when those modules were only introduced after yes. you've done that certificate. Yeah. And that's why it was raised all the way back up to, you know, plenary session in the IMO, and that clarity was discussed in the working group, and it was decided, no, actually, when you read the rules carefully, it is crystal clear that you don't have to go back and do it. So to answer your question about where does flag state come in, all the flag states are being reminded that so long as somebody has their PSSR certificates, they're fine, and you can't make them go back and do new modules.
Defeats the
There's discussion about how that can
this out, doesn't it?
Say
it defeats the whole purpose of having this rolled out, is to get seafarers educated in this arena, but having that regulation where it's only seafarers who can have that training after the fact or after the date, exactly. Yeah, they miss out.
It raised a lot of eyebrows. It was a very interesting debate, listening to a lot of the different flag states coming up with their points. And I did pick up a lot of disappointment in a few of the delegates, because they genuinely thought that within 5 years, everyone was going to be caught on this one and would receive the training. But the regulations, it is not the regulations that were introduced, it's the regs that govern the new regs, which were the important section, and they weren't touched. So that's why, you know, you loop back to what does flag state do? There's very little they can do to enforce this. This remains on owners, but the principle is now out there. And I think that's really important. That's really positive for all seafarers. When we discussed it, I think you asked previously about how seriously this is taken. The fact that I'd say a day and a half of my life at the IMO during that meeting was spent discussing this issue alone, raises, I think, evidence that this is no longer something that is being brushed into a corner. This is very definitely being taken very seriously now.
The big question is, what's the purpose of having this integrated in the training? Because I think it's multifaceted. And one of them is the obvious, to get seafarers educated in the area to reduce cases of harassment, bullying, and sexual assault.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on the purpose?
Yeah, so things to remember with SDCW, it treats seafarers of three levels, and you've got what officially is called the support level, and translating that, it means the ratings. So the support level is the rating card, and the training that will be given as part of PSSR is everybody. So it catches officers and ratings. But the purpose of that training, and when you look at what it basically contains, what people are trying to achieve with it, is contributes to the prevention and response to violence and harassment, including sexual harassment, bullying, and sexual assault. Yeah, that's the long phraseology. But it's basic knowledge of what's going on. It's what constitutes violence, harassment, sexual harassment, bullying. And then I think one of the really interesting elements of it is what's the consequence? And people are going to be taught what are the consequences of this? And this is how people internalize it. There's that lovely diagram people have got of an iceberg, and people can see just that tip of the iceberg, which is somebody being a bit upset by a snide comment or an inappropriate touch or whatever it is. But then you've got the rest of the iceberg below, and it's that internalized harm. It's how people then feel degraded. They feel devalued. They feel demotivated. They're no longer that really positive member of your team. And so the basic training that's going to be given to absolutely everybody is to stress its effects on health and well-being. And actually, one of the big ones is its effects on safety. Shifts run best when you have cohesive teams. And that's not just a cohesive team that's guest-focused and looking at the product of the super yacht, which is very happy guests having had a fantastic time on board. This is also when it comes to the safety aspect, doing boat evolutions, doing the fun evolutions for the guests, just galley engineering. If you've got people that you trust and that are cohesive, they are going to produce much, much better results, much more safely. I think that's something which is at the heart of the new training, which is going to be given out. That's at the support level. Then you come up to what's known as the operational level, and that is your junior officers, your deck officers, and your engineer officers. And they're going to be taught some extra bits on top of that, which is essentially understanding of the mental health issues, but more importantly, the beginning to put through the onboard management through appropriate response and support. So it's not just understanding it, recognizing it, and being able to report it. This is actually starting to deal with it. And so this is where people are finally starting to work out that you can't leave this to just ordinary human judgment, because this is emotional. And when you put emotions in amongst judgment, people follow their emotions. Whereas if you've taught them in advance, then they've got that toolkit. They can say, okay, well, let's take the emotion out of this. Let's put pragmatism and effect in. I am watching this. I'm going to be an active bystander. I'm going to do something about it. Right. Now I've dealt with the immediate issue. Let's start looking at that iceberg. Let's work out what's going on. How do we prevent it happening again? How do we address those mental health issues that now may have occurred within somebody that's been the victim? How do we change the attitude of the perpetrator? And then there's another step again. When it comes up to the management level, which is the masters and the skippers, they're being taught even more, which is how to stop it happening in the first place. And let's really get to the roots of this. Let's stop people thinking about dealing with it, and let's stop it. I think that's going to be really positive as this training comes through. And once those courses have been designed and are available, that loops back to the owners and even the masters themselves, saying that actually we're going to have a standout day. We're going to spend a day when everyone's going to get trained in this, and we're not going to let it happen on their watch, on their vessel.
What rights do crew members have now as a result of this regulation rolling out? Case scenario, a captain who hasn't done the recent PSSR is touching a stewardess, has his hand in between her legs. And this crew member has done the training and very quickly knows, this is sexual assault. Where do they stand? Where do they go? Who's accountable? How is it addressed?
So what you've described there is catastrophic sexual assault. That comes back to national laws. So to always kind of recycle some of the chat we had previously, what you need to bear in mind there is that a yacht is like any other registered business in the state in which, the flag registry of that vessel. So if something occurs, the horrible situation you've just described there, if that occurred in a workplace in Australia, then the first thing you would do is look at Australian law, Australian employment law. I'm slightly more familiar with UK law. So you would go to the Protection from Harassment Act 1997, and there's a lot of focus there on stalking, but also on sexual harassment. You've got the UK Equality Act of 2010. There's a whole series of primary legislation that you can immediately turn to export. Basically, the master is potentially engaged in a criminal offence. And it doesn't matter what training the master has or hasn't received. It doesn't matter what training the stewardess has or hasn't received. The law's the law. You don't need to be trained in the law. Ignorance of the law is no defence. The answer there, the crew member is always going to be in a horribly awkward situation, particularly if it's the master, because by rights, the primary person you would report to in normal circumstances is the master. What I would say is immediately report any incident like that to your line manager. Do not let them brush it under the carpet. You mentioned previously, you've got the DPA is always a good contact because the DPA is supposed to be there in lieu of matters. Is that DPA is there for the master for a whole range of reasons. But if the master is not behaving as they should, then you can go to the DPA. Taking it off the ship is always going to be an awkward matter. And therefore, it loops all the way back to what I said, let's try and nip it in the bud. Let's try and prevent these things happening in the first place. What I would immediately say if I was the steward or stewardess is, can you please take your hand out from there? And just address it. Be polite. Try not to be confrontational. Confrontation sparks emotion. And emotions very quickly run away from themselves. But just politely, can you please stop doing that? Can you take your hand away? Report it to a line manager. And there's a whole series of other things. This loops back to when I did my training as an equality and diversity advisor for ships. Start a diary of every single incident. And make sure that diary not only captures the past, which you make clear in the diary that those are not contemporaneous notes, they are historical records. But then every time something happens, make a contemporaneous note of it, because that's really powerful evidence. Report every single occurrence to your line manager to make sure that their records are being kept of this. Ultimately, you've got to address it. And in terms of flag state, if the vessel, if the master's not doing something about it, what you described there as criminal, well, basically, that's when very quickly you would hope somebody from the company or the DPA raises it to appropriate authorities. One would hope most of the time it never gets to that stage, because what you've described is sexual assault, which is crime in most jurisdictions. Interestingly, in some jurisdictions, it's not. That's the problem. It depends on where you're flagged.
I'm confused, though, because in our previous discussion, it was bullying that was considered not a criminal act. Is that correct?
So again, it depends on what the flag state law, it depends on your registration. So, you know, you go back to the UK Equality Act, and if somebody's conduct has the purpose or effect of creating an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating environment, then you are harassing somebody. In it, you know, that is a criminal offence. You know, that is against the law. But that's the UK. Again, it comes back. So if you remember in our discussion, I said the problem is you go to other jurisdictions that don't have that. I raised a country previously, and it's an interesting one for me to raise because it's one most people have never heard of, Eswatini. And the reason I choose Eswatini as a country is because it's not a member state of the IMO. Therefore, it's not subject to a lot of the IMO rules. Having said that, it does have a ship registry. I don't know if there are any yachts on it, but it's certainly got ships on its registry. And when you look at, for example, Eswatini law, they're a signatory to a thing called the Maputo Protocol, which is the African Charter on Human and People's Rights. But sexual harassment is conflated with indecent assault, and it's all common law. So they don't have as many explicit protections, and that's why I said it all depends on what the flag state law is. When you sign on, look at the stern of the vessel, look at the flag state, because you're about to become subject to the laws of that state. And if you're a Brit working on a Eswatini registered vessel, you're subject to Eswatini law. If you're a Brit working on a Brit vessel, then you're subject to British law, is the more you know. The fact that you're holding British passport doesn't give you rights if you're serving on a vessel that's registered in another jurisdiction.
So how was it addressed when you were working in the Navy back then?
That's a great question. So when I was in the Royal Navy, it was dealt with on a number of levels. The first off is that everybody was trained. It was about a half-day course we had to do once every 3 years. If you did not do that course, then it was tracked through our HR system automatically, and you would get an email reminding you to do it. If you still don't do it, your boss would get an email to remind you to do it. So it wasn't one of those optional things. It was tracked, it was recorded. And that was the course that just did the basic everybody knows it level. On top of that, on every ship, there is what's known as an EDA, an Equality and Diversity Advisor. And this is when I'm still at sea. And that was a five-day course. It was normally the second in command, and it was also the most senior of the ratings on board, the executive warrant officer. And that was a really good course. It would take you right through the basics of exactly what are the definitions of all of the sexual assault, sexual harassment, etc. I think most importantly, it really delved into the harms. And it made you realize, as part of the management team, in my case for Warship, in the case of the people probably listening to this podcast of a yacht, exactly why it's really important to eliminate this. And the reason it's important is cohesive teams perform better. They deliver a better service to your clients. They deliver a higher quality of service. The client notices very quickly if there's friction between crew members. And therefore, the training that we received taught you to spot where those little bits of friction are really early and nip things in the bud. Stop it becoming a problem. Stop it getting to the point where somebody is reporting it to you, because that means something's happened, because you are just watching your ship's company, you're watching your crew, you get to know them. And when somebody's a little bit off in the morning, just pull them to one side and ask them, talk to them, and find out why. And if it is something to do with, you know, they're being harassed, bullied, or whatever it is, then you can nip it in the bud at a really early stage. The resident training was actually all the horrible stuff of if it does become an issue on board. And there's a lot of very good techniques which you can use. When you first pick it up, it's not just a matter of have a quiet word with both parties. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it's a little bit more. You need the alleged perpetrator and the alleged victim to understand where the one's coming from and the other, because it's not harassment or bullying, it's actually just robust management. And sometimes that's perfectly appropriate. And in that case, sitting down. Sometimes they don't want to sit down in the same room. It's a really odd one I had to deal with years ago. And I just joined a ship and I picked something up very quickly. And you put one person in a room at one end of the ship, the other person in a room at the other end of the ship, both with a friend with them. And they made a phone call to each other.
Yes.
And it sounds really odd making a phone call whilst you're both on the same vessel. But actually, it was really powerful because it allowed them to talk things through without the distraction of body language. And it completely resolved the issue. But you learn all the little techniques like that. Another one is you just get somebody to write a letter to the other party. So again, and they exchange letters. So both write their own letters beforehand without seeing the others. So the first exchange of letters is, well, actually, the reason I'm doing this, you know, sometimes, particularly with harassment and bullying, there's an interesting fine line between robust management, where somebody's underperforming, and bullying and harassment, which is actually where you're degrading somebody. Instead of picking them up, you're actually driving them down. And just getting two people to exchange letters, one person sees as bullying and harassment, the other person thinks is just leadership and guidance. And exchanging those two letters, so if I change my behaviour a little bit that way as the alleged victim, and the perpetrator changes their behaviour a little bit the other way as the alleged perpetrator, actually we return back to a perfectly harmonious situation. And the role of the management of a ship is to create a harmonious ship so the guests never know anything that's going on below decks and the guests have the most amazing experience on board. And you stop those frictions coming up from the lower deck into the guest areas.
Absolutely. Now, how long ago did you do this training in the Navy?
Oh, this was 20 years ago.
20
This
years ago, and we as a super yacht industry are nowhere near that now today. So what are your recommendations to our industry? How can we fast track the progress?
The key that I would say is masters as leaders should be running their ships to make them as cohesive as they sensibly can. And actually, that should be very cohesive indeed. If they spot a situation on board where there's any possibility whatsoever of harassment, bullying, sexual harassment, whatever it is, then they can get somebody just to deliver the training. You can do it online. It's not difficult training to do. And just call a stand down. Just say, right, we're going to have a half day stand down in between charters. And we're going to get everybody to, we can either get an outside trainer to come on board and get the whole crew together and deliver a half day course. You can get people to do it online. You can, as the master, in between charters, you can send yourself on one of those courses. And fair to say, a good owner would probably pay for it as well, actually. And it's just raising your awareness. Of course, you can watch YouTube videos on it, but actually, the power of the course is really good because it's a bit like you and I now. The discussion, I think, is one of the most fascinating and important parts because it stops you walking away thinking one thing when actually the truth is another, because you can get to the truth in an interactive course much better than you can just on receive from YouTube videos. I think it's creating that culture on board, which is the single most important thing that any leader does on a vessel. Have a culture where everybody feels valued. Have a culture where everybody feels content. Now, I'm careful with my word there. You're never going to get to a point where everyone's happy. Very rare. And it's normally quite transient. And the point is, you want everyone to be content on board, everyone to be performing to their best, everyone working together. You never want outliers. My background, as you know, my background is military. The worst thing you can have is a combat team where somebody doesn't feel wanted, because that team's going to lose, and that team's going to lose big. Go in super yacht world. If you are a vessel that's got a reputation with to have an incredibly cohesive crew that is content, guest-focused, guest-facing, you're going to get better chances. You're going to get bigger tips.
You're so right, and it's all about culture. Culture is made from values, and values you see through behaviors. And the most productive teams do feel heard, valued, and belonged. Well, that sense of belonging. And what I typically see is what you've described in our industry with crew not feeling appreciated or valued or included. And unfortunately, again, what I see is heads of departments not doing anything because they don't know how. So they just let it all unravel. And then it's a snowball effect. It all comes crashing down.
One of the delightful changes, which is going to go through in the STCW review, the bigger review that's going on at the moment of the STCW code, is more leadership and management training. And it's been recognized that the original code, as it came out in the 1970s, was extremely task-focused for deck officers. My background, it was very much about the bridge watch-keeping side and about the seamanship side. And people have realized now that mandatory training at the operational level, which is your junior deck officers, and at the management level, which is your master, your chief officers and masters, is really important, because to have those safe ships, and the whole point of the STCW code is safety. That's it, the code says that. To have safe ships, you need well-led ships. And having a master who is phenomenally competent at pilotage and ship handling isn't enough these days. He or she also needs to be able to manage their vessel, manage the crew, and that is the leadership and the management side, and that is being improved in terms of the quality of training. Ergo, you then extend that through. Part of leadership and management is also the welfare of your crew. It's the people side, it's the sexual harassment, bullying, making people feel valued. It's something which I was very lucky in my seagoing career. We would regularly get pulled off on a lot of good leadership courses. having made that transition from dark grey vessels into the merchant fleet, it still raises my eyebrows, actually, how little management training there is out there.
It's so unfortunate, and it makes no sense whatsoever when you're in a service-based industry and not only in a leadership role, but you're living and working with crews. So I think you need it more than ever, you know, understand human behavior and how you can engage or activate servant leadership.
Exactly. And it's something that's, in context, your point is really well made there about you're living and working together. Mm-hmm. The challenges of a vessel as a workplace are something which is almost without parallel in the broader civilian community. Most people drive to work, they commute, they spend a couple of hours a day in the office, you know, 8 or 4, whatever it is, and drive home. Their life outside of work is completely different from their life inside work. Whereas on a vessel, be it a yacht, be it a big ship, whatever, your life is that vessel for 4 months, whatever your contract length is. You step on board, and a lot of people never step ashore in that period. So you're either on watch, you're with forced friends, because you arrive in that vessel and your friends for the next 4 months are given to you. You don't choose them. They are the other people on board that vessel. One of the things I think with hiring and firing in the merchant navy that I look at comparing it to the Royal Navy, how do you make sure that nobody upsets the feng shui? Mm. How do you make sure that everybody in the mess is going to be working together, cohesive, common values, common outlook? What you don't want is the outlier who's going to come in full of themselves and their rights, when actually this is about everybody, this is about a collective. And that's something which a good leader will imbue. It comes back to that culture on board. And if you've got a really lovely culture, command-led by the master, then you can create that cohesive team. And that cohesive team is safer, and that cohesive team is more guest-focused, more guest satisfaction, more charters, bigger tips.
Why wouldn't you? You know,
I would like to think that why wouldn't you? The problem is some people don't. Maybe it's because people don't know. Maybe it's people have thoughts of it.
I think there's stigma around, especially for the deck department, because they've got to do so many tickets. It's like, are you kidding me? You've got to tell me now I've got to do a leadership course? It's another ticket, another, you know, it's another thing that I have to do, more money, more time. And I think they're at capacity, but they don't understand the value, the long-term value it brings to their career. In adjacent to having the technical skills, you know, these meta skills are absolutely crucial, which makes you a fine leader and give you that competitive edge in a very saturated market.
Oh, you just hit a really good one, which is investing in yourself. Mm. And it's that thing of, yes, you've got to do mandatory tickets, of course you have, but sometimes doing that course for you, be it leadership, be it management, maybe it's actually something to do with sexual assault prevention response. Making that little investment in yourself that gives you another unique selling point for yourself. It gives you that edge. It means that when you've got guests on board, they're watching various people who are perfectly adequate leaders, but somebody who invested in themselves during an off-charter period is that exceptional leader. Mm-hmm. And you never know which guest it is that's about to go and buy their own yacht and wants to then invest in you because they can see that spark in somebody else. I've got friends that, you know, many people go off to university and do their bachelor's degrees, which of course, in the UK, you get some degree of government support, government loans for, but then a few years later, they decide to do a master's degree. And a lot of people doing master's degrees are self-funded. Why does somebody self-fund through a master's degree? And the answer is because the prospects at the other end of it are greater.
More lucrative.
And I think what you just touched on there is if you're a deck officer, spot that opportunity. Can you book yourself on a, you know, on a one-day sexual harassment prevention response course? That gives you the edge because that means you can deal with those situations before they become a problem. A, you've saved yourself a world in the long term, but people will notice. Put yourself through a leadership course, even if it's correspondence, which are an awful lot cheaper. then again, gives you that little bit of an edge. It means you understand some of the theory. And leaders, some leaders are born, many leaders are trained. And the way you train, the way a good way of training a leader is simply give them not checklists and tick boxes, it's give them ideas and it's give them little concepts and they will work out what fits their style. They'll try things, what works. And as a junior officer, it's beautiful to be able to try little techniques out, work out what suits you, what do my sailors respond to? What do my crew respond to? And that then just generates a beautiful leader eventually, somebody that can be that leader of a big team. Biggest teams I've led was running a training group. I have 250 staff and over 1,000 students in it. Running a squadron of divers, I had 200 staff, 100 divers and 100 support staff who were just phenomenal. And but I raised that because when you're running a bunch of testosterone and estrogen fueled divers, I needed different leadership techniques than when I was running a training group which had some incredibly clever instructors. And you're picking out that toolkit and you need to create that self-toolkit. It's great fun doing it.
I would love to dive into your world, Chris, and I can see that you've really invested in yourself. I've had a lot of feedback on our previous interview. It did exceptionally well, and I think more so people walked away with more knowledge, and in that they are better equipped to deal with day-to-day challenges. So, always a delight speaking to you, Chris. I hope that our conversation continues. Thank you so much.
If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.